All right, so we're diving deep today, really deep. We've got this this fascinating investor update from Tokyo, and I'm really curious to get your take on this one.
Yeah, this is really interesting. Not your typical, kind of dry financial report.
Yeah.
This is a deep dive into how Tokyo thinks about investing.
Exactly. So, I mean, they go into like their view on Laurent Freixe, who's the new CEO of Nestlé. We get a look at their actual depot broken down into like these categories, Eifin Motor and Favoriton, which, kind of hints at their investment approach.
Definitely gives us a framework.
Yeah. And then like we've got the their core Eichen Holdings, which we'll definitely get into. There's this new Rendite tabelle that they've included, which I think is like a return overview. And then like some updates on some major companies, Nestlé, Coca-Cola, McDonald's. And finally, we get to see like the transactions they made in March, the buys and sells, and their cash position.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, it is. So it's really a comprehensive look at their strategy and the moves they're making. Our goal, our mission in this deep dive is to like really try to understand Tokyo's mindset as an investor. Like, what's their overall take on the market? What are the strategies they're putting into action? And most importantly, what's driving those decisions?
Right, let's get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it. Okay, let's unpack this thing. Let's start with Tokyo's analysis of the new leadership at Nestlé. Right off the bat, it's interesting how much detail they give about Laurent Freixe.
Right.
So, we learned that he's from Paris, went to EDHEC Business School, and has been with Nestlé since 1986.
No, that's a long time.
Yeah, and he's like, risen through the ranks in sales and marketing, and then leading operations in all these different regions.
Yeah, so Tokyo seems to be emphasizing that deep internal understanding of Nestlé, right?
Yeah.
Like he's not an outsider coming in.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is someone who's lived and breathed Nestlé for his entire career.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And then like Tokyo also points out his focus on like value-oriented leadership, sustainability, innovation. He's even involved with youth promotion through the Global Apprenticeship Network.
Right.
So it paints a picture of this very well-rounded leader.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, the update notes his appointment as CEO back in September of 24, and his stated goals. Operational excellence, healthy nutrition, profitable brands.
Back to basics.
Yeah, back to basics. Okay, so let's dive into Tokyo's own portfolio now, starting with this three-part depot structure: Eichen, Motor, and Favoriton. I like this. It's a really clear framework for how they think about their investments.
Goalie.
So they describe Eichen, which translates to oaks, right?
Yeah.
Like these are their core holdings.
Strong and steady.
Yeah, strong and steady, 12 blue chip and smaller, but consistently profitable and dividend paying stocks. And the target return here is pretty steady, 6-7% per year, with this long term buy and hold approach. These are like, the foundational dependable investments in their portfolio.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like, what distinguishes, Motor and Favoriton for Tokyo?
Yeah, good question. So, the update focuses on Eichen today, but I think the names themselves give us some clues.
Yeah,
Like Motor probably suggests, investments with higher growth potential, like really driving the returns.
yeah.
And Favoriton probably means, favorites, stocks that Tokyo has a really strong conviction in.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the core of their strategy, at least within this Eichen segment, is stability and consistent returns. Okay, now within the Eichen discussion, Tokyo brings up their view on the U.S. economy, and they use this term, this phrase, Trump session.
That's a strong word.
Yeah, it is a strong word. So what's the implication for their strategy?
So Tokyo is trying to anticipate potential policy shifts and how that might affect specific sectors.
Right.
Like they're thinking ahead.
Yeah.
And Trump session clearly signals this concern about, potential recessionary pressures, possibly arising from trade policies under a future Trump administration. So this concern is like the direct rationale Tokyo gives for significantly reducing their positions in Coca-Cola, KO, and McDonald's, MCD.
Right. They're anticipating these companies might see lower prices in a weaker U.S. economy.
Exactly.
So it's
Yeah.
this preemptive move, right, based on a macroeconomic outlook. And then even if that scenario doesn't, fully materialize. They also mention another benefit to reducing these positions, realizing those gains now, and managing their tax liability. They even have this little saying, a friend of paying taxes now and then, and not all at the end.
Yeah, I like that. It's proactive.
It's a very, proactive approach to tax planning.
Absolutely.
And then what's also interesting is they highlight this this positive development with their Gilead Sciences investment.
Yeah, how their profit and loss on that position has gone from 21% up to 55%.
Yeah.
I mean, that just underscores the point that patients can pay off in investing.
Yeah.
Especially with companies in sectors like healthcare that can see, significant breakthroughs over time.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a good reminder.
Okay, so let's move on to the individual company updates, starting with Nestle.
Okay.
And Tokyo's opening line here is very direct. When do you buy Nestle shares in the crisis? So
right.
Now.
Straight to the point.
Yeah. So what's the context for this statement?
Okay. So they jump right into this this key metric they're watching for Nestle. Rat bridge, real internal growth.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially the number of units that Nestle is selling.
Right.
And Tokyo points out this had been slightly negative previously. So apparently Nestle had implemented, these price increases to stabilize revenue, maintain profit margins.
Mm-hmm.
But Tokyo observed that this tactic led to some consumers switching to other brands.
Really?
Yeah, even Nestle's own lower priced alternatives.
Oh, interesting.
So it seems like there was this delicate balance they were trying to strike.
Yeah.
Raising prices but not losing customers.
Right. And this coincided with some significant leadership changes, right?
Yeah.
Tokyo mentions that that Mark Schneider stepped down as CEO in August of 24 and also lost his supervisory board position, which Tokyo notes is unusual for outgoing Nestle CEOs.
Yeah, that's not typical.
So it hints at potential, dissatisfaction.
Yeah, like maybe they weren't happy with the recent performance.
Yeah, and Tokyo even offers this kind of counter argument that Schneider might make, right? That this negative RIG trend was just a consequence of post-pandemic economic shifts and inflationary pressures, and that marketing efforts would eventually, win back customers as their purchasing power recovered.
Right. A potential defense.
Yeah. So, they present a balanced view, before offering their own analysis, but then they highlight this crucial development.
Yeah.
RIG actually returned to positive territory, 0.8% in FY24.
Okay, so that sounds like good news.
Yeah.
But there's a but.
There's a but.
Because the update also brings up concerns raised by Chairman Paul Bulk about this significant increase in debt during Schneider's time as CEO,
okay,
which included that acquisition of the Starbucks licenses.
Right.
So, yeah, there are still lingering questions about the financial decisions made under the previous leadership.
Yeah, for sure. And then Tokyo makes this interesting observation that that Schneider was actually the first CEO that Nestle hired from outside the company.
Oh, interesting.
And so the appointment of Laurent Freix is a return to tradition.
Okay.
So clearly there are these high expectations that that Freix will be able to steer Nestle back on this growth path, this 4-5% revenue growth path. So how are they going to do that?
So Tokyo outlines a two-pronged approach. First, a growth program aimed at optimizing costs.
Mm-hmm.
Negotiating better terms with suppliers.
Okay.
And then reinvesting those savings into marketing.
Okay.
So a significant increase in marketing spending, up to 28 billion CHH from the current 25 billion.
Wow. So it's efficiency gains and reinvesting in brand building.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, what's also critical for a company like Nestle, as Tokyo emphasizes, is this ability to consistently generate strong cash flow. And in FY24, that remained healthy, 10.7 billion CHF.
Yeah, that's solid.
Yeah, and that's allowed Nestle to continue this impressive streak of dividend increases.
Their 29th consecutive annual increase to 3.05 CHF per share.
It's really a strong signal of stability, commitment to shareholders.
For sure.
And then this brings us to the stock price. Tokyo notes this significant decline from a high of 130 CHF in 2022 down to to 75 CHF in early 24. And actually, Tokyo pointed out this decline back in March of 24 and made an initial purchase then.
Okay.
So now with this new CEO and these outline strategies, they're doubling down.
They're buying more.
Yeah, they're buying more. They have this great line, "The market sees a catastrophe, I consider it solvable."
I love that.
It's really Tokyo's contrarian investment style.
Yeah, very much so.
And then they, you know, they project an expected annual return of 8% using this discounted cash flow method, which you know, tries to figure out what a company's worth today based on its future expected cash flows.
Right.
And that's in addition to this current dividend yield of 3.39%. Tokyo also briefly mentioned some factors that are impacting Nestle's free cash flow right now, like increased capital expenditure and inventory and costs associated with restructuring their portfolio.
So it's a very thorough analysis of their investment thesis.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's switch gears now to another major holding in their portfolio, Coca-Cola.
Okay.
What are the key metrics Tokyo is paying attention to with this company?
So for Coke, Tokyo focuses on two primary indicators: unit case volume, which is, you know, the number of physical cases of beverages sold, and then comparable currency neutral operating income, which gives us a sense of, you know, the underlying profitability.
Okay.
You know, without being affected by currency fluctuations or one-time items.
Right, right. So in FY24, unit case volume saw a 1% increase, with Latin America being the strongest performing region at plus 3%.
Yeah, but Tokyo points out that this is a slowdown compared to the previous year's overall growth of 2%.
Okay, so a slight deceleration in the number of cases being sold globally, but still positive growth, especially in Latin America. Now, what about the operating income?
So the news on the profitability front is more encouraging. Comparable currency neutral operating income increased by a robust 16% in FY24.
Wow.
Matching the previous year's strong growth, again, with Latin America leading the way. So, you know, volume growth has slowed, but Coca-Cola is still generating, you know, significant profit growth.
Yeah, yeah. Tokyo also brings up Costa Coffee, which is part of the Coca-Cola family of brands. How's that business performing?
This is a point of concern for Tokyo. They note a 3% fall in Costa Coffee's revenue in FY24.
Oh, wow.
Which is a reversal from the 3% increase they saw in FY23.
Yeah.
And the UK market is specifically mentioned as a key reason for this decline.
Okay, so this poor performance leads Tokyo to raise this important question,
yeah,
about the potential sale of Costa Coffee. Especially if, you know, if it's not contributing positively to Coca-Cola's overall growth strategy.
Yeah, it makes sense. If a significant part of the business isn't performing, you might consider divesting, right?
Right, exactly.
Free up capital and focus.
Yeah. And speaking of potentially needing to free up capital, the update then goes into this significant issue involving the IRS.
Yeah.
So this is a major point of uncertainty that Tokyo highlights. The IRS is alleging tax evasion by Coca-Cola for the years 2007 to 2009. And the core of the accusation is that Coke shifted profits to subsidiaries located in low-tax countries, places like Brazil, Chile, Costa Rica, Egypt, Eswatini, Ireland, and Mexico.
Yeah, a pretty diverse list of countries.
Yeah. And the IRS claims these subsidiaries reported, like, unusually high profits despite operating in industries with typically low margins. And this all revolves around this concept of transfer pricing optimization.
Right. How multinational companies price transactions between their different subsidiaries.
Yeah. And the potential financial consequences here are substantial.
Huge. The IRS is demanding $6 billion, which includes like a significant $3.3 billion in interest on the $2.7 billion in allegedly unpaid taxes.
Wow.
So Tokyo notes that Coke is appealing this decision,
yeah,
but has already reduced its FY24 cash flow by this $6 billion.
So they're already like taking a hit.
Yeah, they're being cautious.
Yeah.
But Tokyo's worry extends beyond just these initial 3 years.
Right.
Because they're speculating that if Coke believed their transfer pricing practices were, you know, legitimate during 2007, 2009, they probably can change those practices, right?
Yeah, in the following years.
So this could be a much larger issue.
Potentially involving like up to 17 years of similar activity.
Exactly.
And Tokyo estimates the total potential liability could be as high as $16 billion plus accrued interest.
Yeah, that's a massive potential overhang for the company.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge. And then Tokyo also connects this to the recent appointment of Billy Long, who has ties to Trump as the head of the IRS,
Right.
suggesting a possible shift towards a more aggressive stance on corporate tax enforcement.
Yeah, the timing of this IRS challenge is interesting,
Yeah.
and it adds to the uncertainty surrounding Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Tokyo also points to some publicly disclosed insider sales transactions,
Right.
particularly by CEO James Robert Quincy, noting, these substantial stock sales relative to his annual compensation. And while they don't, definitively link this to the IRS situation, they do suggest it's a factor worth noting.
Yeah, especially given all the uncertainty.
Yeah. So given all this uncertainty with the tax issue, it's interesting to remember Tokyo's earlier decision to significantly reduce their Coca-Cola position, driven by those concerns about high U.S. stock valuations and potential trade policy shifts. So it seems they're even more confident in that decision now.
Yeah, Tokyo summarizes their expectation of like 2-3 difficult years ahead for Coke as they navigate this whole complex situation. They say they would consider it a potential core investment again once, these issues are resolved and there's more clarity. It's a good example of how a major, unforeseen risk can really alter an investment thesis.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move on to the update on McDonald's. What's the key story there?
So for McDonald's, Tokyo highlights this notable slowdown in revenue growth from a strong 10% in 23 down to just 2% in 24.
Wow.
And this is, they attribute this to a weaker performance in the US where price increases have led to some customer resistance.
Yeah, makes sense.
And there was that unconfirmed E. coli scare in onions back in October.
Right, yeah.
Probably had a temporary impact.
Right. So a combination of pricing pressures and a bit of negative publicity impacting their core US market. How did their international operations do?
Latin America continues to be a strong performer. Solid unit case volume growth of 3%,
Okay.
while North America was basically flat.
Okay.
So that regional divergence really stands out.
Yeah. Tokyo also makes this point about McDonald's substantial and growing real estate portfolio.
Yeah.
It seems like this is an important aspect of their business model that sometimes gets overlooked.
Totally is. Their real estate holdings continue to expand. They reached $44.2 billion in 24, up from $39 billion in 22. But what's really interesting is the income this portfolio generates. So Tokyo highlights $2.88 billion in pure rental income, which is a 7% return on the real estate value. But then when you factor in income from rent, franchise fees, and revenue sharing agreements, the total income generated jumps to an impressive $15.7 billion.
Wow, that's a 38% return.
Exactly. So, McDonald's is operating as this significant real estate business
Yeah.
in addition to their fast food operations.
So they're not just selling burgers, they're a
They're
landlord.
a global landlord.
Yeah. What about their future strategy? What's driving their plans?
So CEO Chris Kempczinski has outlined this strategy called Accelerating the Arches, which focuses on increasing market share through, value offerings, menu innovation, and culturally relevant marketing. But a key pillar of this is development, with this goal of increasing their restaurant count from 41,822 at the end of 23 to 50,000 by the end of 27.
So that's a pretty rapid pace of expansion. Where's this growth likely to be concentrated?
So Tokyo connects this accelerated growth to McDonald's strong profitability, which had fueled significant share buyback programs. But now it appears they're scaling back those buybacks to invest more heavily in their real estate portfolio, likely focusing on those high growth regions like Latin America.
Right. It's a strategic shift, right?
Totally, from returning capital through buybacks to reinvesting in physical expansion.
Yeah, makes sense. Focus investment where the returns are highest.
Exactly.
Tokyo also mentioned something about negative equity for McDonald's.
Yeah, so their equity is currently negative, which is largely due to the fact that their real estate portfolio is financed with a lot of debt, around 90%.
Well.
But Tokyo also makes this crucial point that the book value of this real estate is likely significantly undervalued.
Oh, interesting.
The actual market value of their properties is probably much higher.
Right.
So their underlying financial health is probably stronger than that negative equity figure alone might suggest.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, let's move to the final section of Tokyo's investor update, their recent trading activity and overall outlook. What stocks did they buy and sell in March?
So in March, Tokyo made three new purchases: Nestle, NESN, which we've already discussed, as well as AB InBev, ABI, the global brewing giant, and Siemens Healthineers, SHL, a major player in medical technology. On the selling side, they completely exited their position in Cognex, CGNX, a company specializing in machine vision systems.
Oh. Okay, so let's dive into the rationale behind these moves, starting with the additional purchase of Nestle.
Right. So as we discussed, you know, the further investment in Nestle is driven by Tokyo's belief in the new CEO's ability to turn things around and capitalize on this lower stock price.
Yeah.
Which Tokyo sees as a solvable situation.
Right.
And even with a projected 8% annual return, it fits within their Eichen category.
Right. Those stable long-term holdings.
Exactly.
Okay. What about the purchase of AB InBev? They've certainly faced some headwinds recently.
Yeah. So Tokyo highlights AB InBev as having the highest expected return within their Eichen category, projecting a 21% return.
Wow.
And they note that this was previously a loss-making position for them.
Okay.
But its performance has been improving, and Tokyo decided to increase their holding before the stock potentially rallies further. So it seems like they believe in a turnaround story there.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting in early.
Yeah, yeah. And then and then Siemens Healthineers is a new addition to the portfolio. What's the thinking there?
So Siemens Healthineers was added specifically to increase Tokyo's exposure to the European market after reducing their US holdings in Coke and McDonald's.
Okay, makes sense.
And Tokyo is really attracted to their strong position in medical imaging hardware and software. You know, they see the potential for integrating artificial intelligence-based features.
Right, right.
And they also believe the stock is currently undervalued, with their DCF analysis suggesting a potential 12% annual return.
Mm, yeah, so a good opportunity there. Mm. Okay, now let's look at the sale of Cognex. What prompted that decision?
So the sale of Cognex is primarily driven by Tokyo's more cautious economic outlook, specifically those concerns that, you know, Trump's policies could lead to a weaker economy.
Mm.
And Cognex being a company whose performance is tied to industrial activity and capital expenditures,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's expected to underperform in a less robust economic environment.
Right.
Additionally, Tokyo notes that the sale allowed them to engage in tax loss harvesting, which can be a useful strategy to offset capital gains.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Finally, Tokyo mentions this significant cash position in their portfolio.
Yeah. Their cash allocation is at a fairly high 29%.
Wow.
And this reflects their overall caution.
Mm-hmm.
Given all the uncertainty with potential trade policies and the broader economic outlook,
yeah.
they explicitly state they're comfortable holding more cash right now, as it provides them with flexibility, you know, to take advantage of opportunities if prices decline.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, you know, Tokyo includes this disclaimer, you know, reminding readers that this update is for informational purposes only.
Right.
And not investment advice.
Of course, of course.
They strongly advise doing your own research, consulting with advisors, and they underscore the inherent risks involved in investing.
Yeah, absolutely. So to summarize our deep dive into Tokyo's March investor update, we see this cautious perspective on the U.S. market influencing decisions to reduce holdings in Coca-Cola and McDonald's. We see strategic investments in companies like Nestle, AB InBev, and Siemens Healthineers based on, you know, specific factors and valuation considerations. And then we see this significant cash position reflecting a degree of uncertainty about the future market environment.
Yeah, exactly. Tokyo's update provides a valuable look into, you know, the thought process of an active investor navigating a complex market.
Mm-hmm.
It highlights how macroeconomic views, company-specific analysis, and even potential tax implications can all play a role in shaping portfolio decisions.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating glimpse into into their thinking. And that brings us to our final thought for you, our listener. Considering Tokyo's approach of actively managing a portfolio based on both macroeconomic and company-specific analysis, what do you see as the potential advantages and disadvantages of this style? How does it compare with your own investment philosophy, and how are you thinking about balancing risk management with the pursuit of returns in this current market? It's definitely something to consider as you continue on your own investment journey. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
Thanks for listening.